This episode is brought to you by Summer School Electronics. With pedals like the Snow Day Delay, the Pep Rally Fuzz, the Trash Panda, and my personal favorite, the Science Fair, which is two classic dirt pedals in one with a mid-boosted overdrive on one side, a black lab rat circuit on the other, and a blend knob to blend between them to find the perfect classic stacked dirt sound you're looking for, it's hard not to find something you'll love. Mark builds all of his pedals by hand in Syracuse, New York, where he also works as a full-time educator. In addition to the super fun graphics on their pedals, Mark also offers custom artwork. Want your dog's face on a pedal? He can do it. Want your face on a pedal? He can make that happen too. Go over to summerschoolelectronics.com and make sure to tell them that 40 Watt Podcast sent you. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to 40 Watt Podcast. My name is Philip. I am your host here with another episode. I missed another week last week. Y'all know how this goes. Scheduling people and my own busy schedule is very hard, but I'm super excited to be back this week. I'm going to type as we talk because I have some people I need to thank at the top of this show. So I've been thanking all of my Patreon supporters at the top of the show, and I have a new one this week that I especially want to make sure I shout out. So let's get all of this started. So I want to thank, new name for me to pronounce. This is actually not that bad. Welcome Julie McFarling to the Patreon supporter list. Also have Abe Matthews, Bradley Jones, Jordan Galash, Duncan Watson, Andy Johns, David Evangelista of the Guitar Dads podcast, Blake Jefferson, Nick Call, Andrew Hensley, Alan Gresham, Dan Pilver of Lewitt Microphones. I'm sorry, Lewitt Audio. Oh, I do that every time. Scott Hamilton from the Effects Loop podcast, Andy Koning, Jim Burns, Tom Kelly, Heath Batt, Ben Fair of Electromotive Sound Co., Rick Calhoun of Honey Picks, Jeffrey Walks, and Kyle Harris. Thank you all for all of your support. You help keep this show on the road. Train on the tracks, boat on the water, insert your own analogy, simile. It's one of those things. You get
pepperoni
it.
Pepperoni on the pizza.
Pepperoni. Yeah, you put the pepperoni on the pizza. Mm-hmm. But that is not this podcast. We're going to talk about some things on this podcast, because this week I have, as you just heard, Blake Weiland of, hold on, let me list all the things. There's the Tone Mob, there's Chasing Tone, there's String Joy. Y'all are now partnered, and we're going to talk about this, partner with Gun Street Wiring. Mm-hmm. You're busy, man. You need to find some time to breathe, or you need to tell somebody else where you're getting those extra 4 hours a day.
I'm getting them from my former commute.
That's true. Okay, that's fair. Yeah. That's very fair.
Yeah, I robbed about three of them from that, and the rest I just kind of cram in wherever I can.
See, that's why. See, the commute thing is so wild to me. Now, even though I've spent time and I lived in cities for a little while, living here in tiny small town Mississippi, when I tell people that, I work 15 minutes from my house, that in Mississippi, 15 minutes means 15 miles.
Okay.
But, you get over to Portland and 15 miles can mean, I don't know, an hour?
It really varies, Like, I live in the burbs and yeah. I had to go basically from the, if you're looking at a map, from the southwest corner to the northwest corner and cross the heart of the city. And while it gave me several routes to go, I still had to cross the heart of the city. So it was only like 26 miles.
Okay. Yeah.
But it took an hour and a half to get there.
Oh, yeah. No,
so, round trip, 3 hours every day. So, yeah, that's where I got a lot of my time back. It was like not having to do that anymore. Really, yeah, genuinely. It was like, wow, I got 3 hours extra per day. This is insane.
That's a big deal. It's people don't think about it. Like, for example, I had a back in 2018. Is that right? Time is a flat circle. Back in 2018, I had my truck die on me. I loved my truck. I missed my having a pickup truck. I had a 05 F-150 King Ranch, and it was old and it was huge and it was great and it was paid for.
That's the best part. That's the best part.
It was paid for.
That's why I bought a 1994 Chevy K2500 because it's paid for.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Well, and I bought it used, so it was great. But eventually, it finally got to a point where it was starting to need. It was costing more than just getting a new vehicle, and between the gas expense. But once I did the math to like, can I afford to add a vehicle car payment to my monthly bills? And just in the gas mileage shift, I saved over two thirds of the car note just in the gas mileage mm-hmm. change. Cause that 14 to 15 miles to a gallon I was getting wasn't great.
No, not great for the long commutes. Comfortable, no. But not yeah. great for the long commutes.
That's exactly right. Mm-hmm. So Blake, let's talk about what you've been up to. Let's talk about some of the things going on. You went to NAMM. I haven't talked about NAMM a lot on this show. I mentioned it a little bit with Hillary from Midriff and with Adrian Thorpe from Thorpe FX mm-hmm. And got their impressions. Of course, Adrian didn't go, but we talked about NAMM. You are a known detractor of the NAMM experience.
Yeah, I have been.
How do you feel about it now?
I still feel the same about it. Largely. Uh-huh. But I'm going to speak about this from a few different perspectives because it changes a little bit. So sure. From StringJoy's current perspective, one of our big goals right now is dealers, right? Yeah. And we had, including myself, we had four people at the booth actively out there shaking babies and kissing hands, you know, and like, hey, that's what we're here for. That's what we're doing. And in that regard, it's a bit tough to calculate, but we all view it as a success. We're going back in January. Now, if you're not going to do that, right? If you're not going to we were really working the booth, right? It was really an active thing. There were coordinated times where, hey, this guy needs to be talking to these very specific people. And those very specific people just walked up and he is stuck talking to this other person who he doesn't really need to be talking to right now, but yeah. We're also not going to be rude to anybody, right? We're not going to kick rocks. You're not important because everybody's important. It's just that some people need to be talking to specific people at specific times. And so there were some times where we all give each other the eye, oh no, he's stuck talking to, a custom guitar builder and I can handle that. He needs to go handle these people, these bigger accounts or whatever, And so there was some coordinated hey, wait a minute. I got to run real quick, but you need to talk to Blake or you need to talk to this person and I'll come back here momentarily. So if you're approaching it from that perspective and really working it and not just sitting there on your phone,
right?
It can be a beneficial thing. Now, that's from a smaller business perspective, right?
Right.
When I talk to the bigger companies, I won't name any names, but basically the consensus is, we don't really need it until they can show that they're going to provide us value. We have all the dealers already.
Right. Yeah.
We don't need them. We don't need the show to write extra business. We're insert large company in the industry here.
Well, I'll just call out, the Fender CEO basically said that in a announcement article mm-hmm. thing. So we can mention him because he put that all out there. That's not breaking any private conversations you may have had with people, but yeah. Fender doesn't need NAMM.
Yeah, and a lot of other companies of similar stature feel similarly. Let's just put it that way. And maybe they haven't publicly said as much, but privately they definitely have. And it's pretty obvious without naming any names what that means. So until and none of these companies are saying, we'll never go back to NAMM. They're just saying, until you can demonstrate that it's worth it.
Yeah, you got to show me value. Show me the value.
Yep. Used to be different. I've been pretty harsh on NAMM at times and sometimes unrealistically harsh. Because in previous years, it was a different story. But since I've been in the business, it's been the same story. So it's a little different. But
so
now
you feel like it's worth it for the small business though? That's really
it's worth it for the small
that?
Business that wants to get dealers.
Okay.
It's worth it for that. And it's worth it if you can control your costs. Now, if you're a small business trying to flex like you're big, that's a bad move. That's a bad move. It's not going to be worth it. Try to get the most bang for your buck. Try to get a booth that looks professional and looks like you care.
Yeah.
But don't try to be shooting off fireworks or acting like you're bigger than you are. Otherwise, you're just wasting money.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I felt like I got a little bit of that not having gone. Obviously, it was a bad weekend for me, even though I really wanted to go. I'm looking at possibly going in January if I can line a bunch of things up. You know what mm-hmm. I mean?
Yeah.
So, but I sort of got that impression that it missed it. It didn't have some of like the spectacle that it has had in the past. Even though I hear more people were there than the previous, and definitely more than the abysmal Nashville NAMM that I went to in 2021.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like, I don't know, I was used to the big announcements and you didn't get that this year. We got the biggest thing, the Benson Echo Rec, which is super rad.
Splashiest thing.
Sure. Splashiest thing, and the thing I want the most, and the thing I can't justify the most.
Right.
But I want it the most. You think maybe there's a place for someone who's got a big splashy thing they're releasing to wait and still and put it out at NAMM? You think that's still a place?
Maybe. See, I didn't even see the Benson Echo Rec thing at NAMM. I was stuck at the booth the whole time.
You were working.
Yeah, but I still knew about it. I probably would have known about it regardless, though.
Yeah.
I think, you know?
I feel like it, too. I feel like if they had just done a regular release the way everybody releases now, that would have still been on everyone's radar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just that cool. I think it genuinely is going to get back. If it's going to exist at all, it's probably going to get back to its roots as a genuine trade show, where that's really what it is. It's for people to go meet dealers. Or it's going to have to expand to something more than that, where the public can purchase things and it becomes more of a spectacle overall. It's going to have to do one of those two things, I think.
We'll be right back.
This podcast is supported in part by String Joy Strings. I'm a snob, at least that's what people tell me. I'm never okay with good enough, and that's where String Joy Strings come in. They're better than good enough. They're the best. String Joy are making some of the finest strings available today right up the road from me in Nashville, Tennessee. They offer custom sets, balanced tension, coated strings, the works. If you need it, they can probably make it happen. You should be using String Joy Strings, and if you're going to order from them, you really could help this podcast out by clicking the affiliate link down in the description or show notes below. You get amazing strings, I get a little bit of that back to help the show keep going. It's a win-win situation. Get your String Joy Strings today. Yeah, that's I agree. I think it's got to get to that. It's got to basically have a internal looking moment where they're like, okay, here are the things that everyone's been yelling at us for a decade now, saying we need to fix and we need to do. Maybe we need to listen to somebody about that.
And I don't have a lot of confidence that they're going to.
Oh, no.
I don't know anyone there. I'm not trying to bash anything. And like I said, we got value out of it this time. Mm-hmm. We're going back. Yeah. So I'm not trying to, and I know I've had opposite stances before. And that's the other thing. If your primary goal is to sell more direct, it's pointless.
There's no reason
to do it.
There's not much reason for Chase Bliss to be there, give an example.
Nope. Or if you're a newer brand and you're starting to really grow, there's probably not a lot of reason to be there unless you want to grow your dealer network. You know,
yeah, and you're ready for the increased workload of adding to a dealer network.
Absolutely. And even then, you might want a little more brand presence in the market overall by not doing that just yet. You know, I think people just need to, I'm saying a lot of things at once here. There was a moment there where everyone felt like they had to do NAMM.
Yeah.
Big and small. Everyone felt like they had to do NAMM. And there was a handful of us kind of screaming at the smaller guys, mostly saying you don't have to. And you probably shouldn't. Is there a better way to spend 10 grand? Almost certainly. The answer to that almost every time for small brands is yes. And then as you get bigger, you know, you have more notoriety. You don't really need it. But there's a very interesting small window where we sit, where it makes all the sense in the world. And we used to not sit in that window. And that's when I was a little more anti. Now we kind of sit in there. And I'm like, all right. This makes more sense for us now. And it's going to be a long time before we shift out of that window, if we ever do.
Right. There's a lot of that window is pretty big once you get into it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You've got to be pretty massive. It is interesting, and I think it's a fun conversation to have. I don't want to spend this whole episode talking about NAMM because everybody's NAMM'd out, I'm sure. Like, nobody wants to hear about it anymore. Everybody's on to newer and exciting things, and we're going to talk about those things a little bit. Because I want to talk about, but let me finish my thought before I fully ADHD out of it.
Go for it.
But I think that is an interesting, I worry that as the big companies back away, although I've heard rumors and you have better sources than I do, so you may be able to contradict them and we can talk off air. But, you know, a couple of the bigger to mid-sized companies or who didn't come this year are thinking about coming again in January. So
it's possible. I mean, the reports of this last one were positive, so I wouldn't be too surprised.
Yeah, me either. I think it'll be really interesting to see where it goes from here because I just want to see one. I want to see a good one. I want to be there for the madness of a, like, busy one before the whole thing dies. I want to be there for the high note at the end of the operatic aria as the main characters ending it all. So, excuse me.
No worries.
Moving on, and it's a Sprite. I don't drink Sprite very often. So I have questions about this because actually it came up in another chat that I'm in, and I realized I don't have the answers. And I think that might be the case. But I remember there was an announcement that you with Stringjoy and Gun Street partnering. Mm-hmm. So Sean's working with y'all. Y'all are working with Sean. What does that look like now? What does that mean that y'all are partnering?
Yeah, well, there's a whole podcast episode about it if you want to hear the nitty gritty details. But that Sean and Scott and I did together.
Right.
But the nutshell version is Sean is, very much of a similar mindset to Scott. Mm-hmm. And he was at a very similar time in his entrepreneurial journey, I guess we'll call it. I don't know.
Yeah. The hero's quest.
Yeah. Yeah. That Scott was when I got involved in Stringjoy. And so we were looking at it going, he has a lot of the same qualities and, also complementing, he's got a lot of the same qualities and also brings up a lot of weak areas in both of us. And, the product's great. The way he treats people is the way people ought to be treated. And, he was just at a similar point when I entered with Stringjoy and we kind of went from there. And so it was very familiar territory to me and to Scott. And it seemed like the right person. And that's what it is above all else. He's the right person. There have been a lot of cool products come along. Yeah. And a lot of cool brands that come along and a lot of cool people, but it's not ever been the right person. And I was also, he was one of the few people that I should backpedal a little bit. He's the only person other than Scott that I could call up and talk about some of the same stuff,
that tracks
with the same kind of understanding. And we realized while we were having all these thoughts, well, would make a lot more sense for him to be a part of this team and we can, kind of supercharge things. While that happened, I was approached while it was happening, while we were having those very initial conversations, Ken from Roadhouse Pickups approached me with no knowledge that this was going on.
Right.
And said, "Hey, do you know anybody that would like to get into making pickups? Because I make cool pickups that don't exist anywhere else." And he was just at a crossroads. He's like, "I either need to take this company and grow it and make it a real thing, a bigger thing, a full-time thing.
Right.
Or I need to continue focusing on my career." It's one of those two things. And he just decided he wanted to continue with his career, which was already very successful. So he was trying to find somebody to take his designs and his equipment and his materials and actually do something with it rather than just putting it in his garage and putting it in a box and calling it a day. And I, at the time, was just like, I don't know, maybe I want to try it. Why not? Like, I like trying things. And I quickly realized, like, I don't have time for this. Like, I learned how to make a few pickups. I have the general idea of how to do it. And I was just like, no, I don't have time. Sean was already working on a pickup line. He was already experimenting with some things. And so
that's a logical next step for him too. That's like
it is. Yeah. And so we just went, well, these pickups literally don't exist anywhere at all. And it's a very rare opportunity to be able to say that. Like, everyone has their take on a PAF yep. or a strap pickup. And we'll probably do that stuff at some point once we come up with some things that we like. But there was nowhere that you could get these, like, Supro style pickups. There's nowhere to get them. Ken was the guy that Supro, when they were still making guitars, would point people to.
Oh, wow.
So it was a really unique scenario where it was like, these are literally non-existent. And we can help bring them back. And they're also some of my favorite pickups. They're in my blue Roni Oceana that people have seen here and there. And I'm just like, this is too good to not try. So kind of it was like we started with merging Gun Street with String Joy. So, you know, they're still independent entities.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, it was a merger. And Roadhouse is no longer an entity, even though Ken still does post some stuff on his socials that is more just a personal thing these days. But that's no longer an entity. I don't even think the website's up anymore. But we'll be coming out with more of the old Roadhouse stuff, some stuff that never did hit the market that's actually never, it's not even old Supro stuff. It's stuff that has never came out before that we're really excited about.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And so there's just all kinds of things cooking over there. And we're hoping to basically help use what we learned from growing String Joy to help Gun Street kind of hop over that log a little quicker. That was very long winded.
No, that's perfect. You know, podcasting, it works when people talk.
true.
That's literally how this all functions. That's the other thing is like the Supro guitars, you mentioned those. I keep forgetting that they don't technically make those anymore. I'm really hoping they will again.
I don't think they're going to. It doesn't sound like it. I don't want to speak for that. I don't have any official connection there, but it doesn't sound
right.
Like it.
That I hate that because those were some really, really rad guitars they were making that it does all the things that I like. It's that vintage nostalgic look and feel, but like a modern made guitar, like mm-hmm. to today's standards. I hate that. I was really hoping
I know they were so back. Cool. Scott has one hanging in his office. So
does he really?
Like, yeah, let's do it. Yeah.
Oh man. So yeah, listeners, go hunt those down before they're not available anymore, and you know, used markets and things go crazy expensive.
And if you like how those things sound, but you don't have one,
yeah, there's a source for pickups.
I'm just saying
you can get something to sound a little bit like it.
Just a little.
Mm-hmm. You go buy you an old vintage one that doesn't work. Maybe the electronics are fried because those electronics weren't exactly the most robust things on the planet.
They weren't.
They really weren't. But that's why I have a Harmony Rebel from the 60s.
So cool.
I love that thing. But when I found out that it's the original pickups and wiring and it's all still intact and working, I was like, buying now. Like, mm-hmm. Because it's so hard to find those old department store guitars that, you know, still function like they're supposed to.
From the like wiring harness and stuff, like they were department stores, right? So they were kind of made to a price point. But when I learned from Ken and through a little bit of research on my own, dissecting the pickup designs of not just the Supro stuff, but the K's and all that. And there's a million different styles of those things, but some of those pickup designs are like brilliant. And it's shocking how a lot of those elements never made it over to Tellies and things like the thing about these, the Burnsides that makes them so cool. Well, there's lots of things, but one of the main things that makes them so quiet is that it's a full Faraday cage around the whole pickup.
Really?
Yeah, they're completely encased. So it's not like silent as in if you had a dummy coil or some other noise cancellation. It's
no Fishman Fluence, but...
Yeah, but it's very quiet, especially for a true actual single coil. There were some people speculating, I think these are like Firebirds. I'm like, I love Firebird pickups, but they're not like Firebird pickups at all. I get why you think that without knowing what's under the hood, but yeah, it's its own thing, which is really, really fun.
That is really, really rad. I love that. I love that somebody's out there doing these kinds of things because there's we fought it out over on the Guitar Nerds podcast for their gear of the year over, you know, modern innovation and vintage nostalgia. And I'm well, I know who I am. Listeners to this podcast know who I am. I'm an old fuddy-duddy stuck in my ways who likes the old stuff. And I love when somebody's still making that stuff available. It doesn't, mm-hmm. I'm not saying it has to be the only thing available, because we live in a wonderful world of gear now where there are so many options that, you know, I can live in my nostalgic old school world over here, where I, you know, trying to teach myself pedal steel and,
it's the best instrument ever.
It is the best and most infuriating instrument ever.
That second part's why I've never picked it up. It's one of my favorite sounding instruments of all time, and I'm scared of it.
You should be. I bought one recently while I was in Nashville, at Fanny's House of Music, because I had one before, and I had tried to learn to play it. It was a Deckley. And it was four knee levers, 3 foot pedals. And I just got so infuriatingly frustrated at the knee levers, trying to understand them.
Okay.
That I don't know, 2 months in, I packed it up and sold it. Like, I was like, nope, not dealing with this. I traded it for your favorite instrument, a Strat. Sold. No, I traded it because I could sell the Strat. That was why I traded it.
Fair enough.
Yeah. It was an easy sell. But this time, what I should have done to begin with, what I should have done that time was folded the knee levers up and just put them away.
Just don't think about them. Yeah.
And don't think about those. Learn the other stuff first. Then you can start incorporating it as you sort of start to know what you're doing.
Makes sense.
That's what I'm doing this time around. There is only one knee lever on this one. This is a Showbud Maverick. So it's got the right brand name, apparently. I don't know. They're pedal steels to me. But I am just focusing on trying to play the damn thing in tune, or something that resembles in tune.
It's so funny because we're so obsessed with guitars, and we're so like, oh, I want this one, which is where we started podcasts about it, you know. But yet, like, when we shift out into other instruments, I feel like a tuba or a trombone or even a pedal steel. You're like, I don't know, it's a pedal steel. They're all the same, right? Well, meanwhile, like a legit like pedal steel person would be like, you're insane. How dare you say a Showbud is just like every other pedal steel? That's the holy grail. You know?
Oh,
like,
I'm sure there's. Yeah. Is there a pedal steel podcast I don't know about?
Oh, probably.
Oh, there's got to be.
There has to be.
Oh, I'm going to start. I've got to find. That's my new goal. Listeners, if you know of a pedal steel podcast, please comment and tell me where I can find that thing. Message me on whatever social media you want to find, because I want to listen to the people who talk about pedal steel all the time.
They're like, no. The tone is in the knee lever.
Oh, the rods attached to your knee lever aren't, 80% solid steel. It's obviously, you don't have the mass necessary for the sustain to get that, 1962 George Strait, not George Jones, whatever recording. I'm losing this scenario entirely, but you get the idea. Mm-hmm. I'm sure somebody is going to talk all about it. I want to hear the episode that talks about the talking guitar, the steel guitar with the talk box attached to it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm here for it. If that doesn't exist.
If it doesn't exist in podcast form, there's like two dudes on a port somewhere that are having this conversation.
Right. Yeah. And we need to find them and get them on a podcast.
And get them microphones.
This needs to exist. You know who would know it? Jason Verlinde would know if there's anyone out there doing this.
He would.
He would.
Shout out Jason.
Yeah, I love Jason. That's where I am. It's like you're not wrong though, because I have an undergrad in music, and so I have a lot of friends who played a bunch of band instruments, and they get picky. I had just one guy talk to me, give me a 3-hour lecture, it felt like, on the various saxophones of the 1920s. It's like, no, you got to understand, this is a Selmer Mark III. I'm like, you are speaking so much gibberish to me right now.
And then
now.
You realize, this is how we sound.
No, it's everyone exactly else. How we sound. I get it. And I'm actually... I'm actually finding myself trying not to be that guy as much anymore and just finding like the joy in playing guitar and the joy in like, you know, being less negative. I talked about this on a past podcast. I'm trying to identify myself more with the things I love than the things I hate anymore. Mm-hmm. Yeah. 'Cause I feel like I've spent too much time talking about, oh, I hate this 'cause it does this or doesn't do that or it blah, 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 blah. And I want to be like, no, I that is probably wonderful for someone else. That's not for me. Here's this thing that I really, really love.
Yeah. I'm learning to express my negative thoughts a little more negatively, actually. Okay. I have negative thoughts, but I feel like I generally have been really positive. You know, I have to just be comfortable at some point and just being like, you know what? I do hate the Doors, okay? I hate the Doors.
Hot take. You heard it here first.
Not first. It's been on Chasing Tone a lot. Okay. But I'm just saying, like, I don't have to like everything, and I don't need to pretend that I find things interesting that I don't. But at the same time, I'm sort of kidding. I understand what you mean, and I do agree with you that just because I don't like something, like, I've realized, like, it doesn't matter. I like so many weird things that other people don't like. It doesn't, like, it's just... like what you like and have fun. As long as you're having fun with it, I'm happy.
That's it. Mm-hmm. But you're right about the Doors. Right about the Doors.
Yeah, they're horrible.
If
the Doors make you happy, I'm also stoked. Just don't make me listen to them. You know?
I also don't think they're horrible. I just don't like listening to them. There's something in either the instrumentation or Jim Morrison's voice or something that just grates on me. Although it's a great documentary if you ever want to.
They are fascinating.
Yeah, it's a great documentary. Mm-hmm. I think Val Kilmer was fantastic in that role. I see the only way I'll listen to the music is if I'm watching the documentary about it. That's pretty much it. I have a couple of books of... do I still have them? I had Jim Morrison's poetry books at one point. Oh, it's wild. It's wild stuff, man. And best part, you don't have to listen to them. You can just read the lyrics.
So, I mean, that's the worst part.
No, it's not. It's way out there. I love getting like really weird and esoteric and I don't know. I'm not going to go into it because I don't remember enough, and I do not remember if those were in the box of books that I had that got water damaged and destroyed. Now I'm really bummed out if they are.
Yeah,
boo-hoo. It's possible. It's possible. So.
Or it's fate. Maybe they deserve it.
they weren't meant for this world.
Sorry, Jim. You got to have the water poured on you.
Yeah, you got to go. Yeah, we can't do this anymore. So
I'm such a jerk.
It's okay. So I didn't even mention at the top of the show, of course, your musical project, American Cyclops. Mm-hmm. So you doing any more recording? You doing any more fun stuff lately?
Yeah. So last fall, I went up to Seattle and recorded with my friend Daniel Harmon. And he, this is a little bit of a long story, but I'll try to condense it. It's the most recent episode that's getting published like right now.
Oh,
sure. It's like processing on my RSS feed right now. He broke his leg a couple years ago or a year ago, whenever it was. And he's a guitar player, singer, songwriter type of person, big gearhead. Yeah. And all of a sudden he found himself like with a really bad leg break and laying flat in his bed. Not exactly conducive to recording guitar.
Yeah, no, it's not.
And so he got out his laptop and some various electronic toys and started making ambient music just to have something to do. And he actually was so happy with some of it, he released it.
And then
he, you know, through his work, he has a lot of people like me that he talks to and just other people that he likes musically. And he wanted to do another. It's like a 7-song record. And so he had a bunch of collab people, including Corey Wong played on a track.
Oh, wow.
Which is pretty crazy. And then I played on a different one. And so that came out last week, which is really cool. So it's under his name, Daniel G. Harmon. And then my track is track 7. So, yeah, it's I think that's the last track. If I remember correctly. I don't have it in front of me. But
I'm going to try to have any links down in the description below. I just pulled it up. We're going to see if I can open up the track listing without it auto-playing.
Good luck. It's I believe it's called The Sounds of Combat Grow Muffled, I believe is the song that I worked on. So I literally went up there, and it was a very American Cyclops experience, because I went up there with a car full of pedals, a baritone guitar, like everything, just unloaded this into a studio and just like blasted it all over the floor, and with like a, and I was like, all right, here we go, and just plugged in a bunch of stuff and went for it. So it was pretty cool, because what I recorded there and what he arranged it into is night and day. I can still hear the elements of what I did.
Yeah.
And he didn't like chop it up to where it was unrecognizable, but the arrangement's so different, it's wild. So that's the most recent thing that's came out.
That's pretty cool. So yeah, I found it. It's the album, listeners, is Unspoken Ghosts, Volume 2. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that last track is Sounds of Combat Grow Muffled.
Yeah.
Super cool. I'm gonna listen to it as soon as we get done recording here.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping, listeners, that I'm remembering to put a link down in the description below. Let me know if I don't, and I'll add it. If it's not there, somebody yell at me, please.
Yeah.
Because that's the only way it's going to get done. I've been on a similar recording, like starting the process and really like wanting to get back into it, because I got my, so my undergrad was in music and audio engineering. It's like an interdisciplinary science degree, right? I did mostly the music side of things, not as much in the audio engineering, because I discovered early on I hate working with some bands, and decided hell no. This yeah, it was like I won't name the exact experience, but there was like an exact moment that I realized I actually hate this.
Mm-hmm. I get it,
but also I have since, like, part of that whole journey of learning not to hate things and learning to focus on the things I love and finding, you know, trying to find joy in things that I didn't find before. Like, I'm killing a little bit of ego and a little bit of self in this, because I realized that I wasn't the easiest person to work with either. Mm-hmm. And so I think that made the experience not really as fun or joyful as it could have been. In that whole experience. So I'm rediscovering all of that and trying to find joy in things that would have caused me to kind of have a knee jerk, you know, negative reaction to them. Mm-hmm. So I'm relearning audio engineering. I'm looking at a couple of courses to actually like go through another course, like, and retrain myself on audio engineering. 'Cause honestly, a whole lot has changed since I got my degree 13 years ago.
I was going to say, when did you get your degree? Yeah, cuz it seems like a whole new world almost.
Yeah, it is a whole new world. Although I've tried a bunch of stuff. Like, I started doing some fun, like, wild wacky recordings. Like, I started trying with, like, you know, Captor X and getting guitar sounds direct, and I've been tinkering around with the and I've talked about it in a past episode, the Neural DSP plugins. They mm-hmm. sound great.
Yeah.
But you know what? They still don't sound like to me
a mic'd
amp. They just, I am back to miking amps.
Yeah.
And I've really been experimenting with that, and it's been a lot of fun to start to experiment in that recording process, and listening to what you went through recording the American Cyclops project was a lot of that impetus for me to finally get back into it and get back to doing it. Because you talked about how you had, you know, not really done recording for a while. You had the band that you played in, you did a bunch of recording, then you were like, I have all this stuff, I should be using it.
Yes. That's more than just showing the stuff, right?
You right. know? Oh, look, like,
stuff's
I have
cool, but yeah, it's not the point.
And yeah, and especially I've had, like, just sitting in the closet, some pretty good microphones, and I've got, you know, this one from Lewitt that I love, and they really should be doing something besides just taking up space in my spare bedroom. And so we're getting there. I'm getting back into enjoying things and recording. So that was a large part because of what you did and you going into it and just doing it.
Well, that's cool. I'm glad to hear that. And I, for what it's worth, most of that initial American Cyclops record, actually pretty much all of it, with the exception of some of the actual synth parts, was all mic'd amps.
Yeah. See, Miking amps is talked about in this like almost mythical thing, and it's really not as complicated as people make it out to be.
I think the problem is sometimes you want it to sound a certain way, and when you do mic amps, it doesn't always sound that way coming out of your headphones or your monitors, and it just takes a little more work than being like, I like this IR. I like this IR. Nope, this one's right. No, this one's right. And don't get me wrong, I'm not hating on that at all. I use it all the time. In fact, to me, the ultimate use now is doing both at the same time.
Yeah,
that's having your cake and eating it too. That's what I like to do now. So,
my favorite thing that I discovered was miking and taking a direct line out of my acoustic electric guitars.
Yeah,
and then using IRs of acoustic guitars on that to blend them together to create it. Not only gives me an option to create almost a double tracked acoustic guitar, but it gives me the chance to completely change the sound of my acoustic guitar into lots of other things. Mm-hmm. Like to me, that was an application that is an application I think isn't talked about enough, that you can get IRs of acoustic guitars to change the sound of your acoustic guitar.
I've heard of people doing that before, but I've never talked to anyone that's done it. So that's super cool.
I originally did it back when I was still playing, you know, church gigs, and I had a Helix, and I would plug my acoustic guitar directly into the Helix, and it just didn't like the sound. And so I went on a hunt and started finding some acoustic IRs and started applying them to the acoustic signal. And I'll be danged if it didn't sound really, really good.
I bet. Yeah, that makes all the sense in the world to me. That's a perfect use case for IRs.
Yeah, exactly. So I think it's this great situation where there's the combination of modern convenience, but also there's just like, I think people need to know how to mic an amp. They just need to do it.
I think it helps you understand what you're looking at when you're playing with amp sims. I don't mean IR specifically, because that's kind of a static thing.
Sure.
But when you're looking at an amp sim and it lets you move the mic around, obviously it sounds different, but why does it sound different? And how do you know if that amp sim's any good if you haven't actually done that before?
Yeah.
How do you grade these things? How do you understand if it sounds good, it is good, right? I'm not saying you have to have played a Dumble to know if it sounds good or not, you know?
Yeah, no.
But having some experience playing around with that stuff is valuable when it comes to understanding whether this IR, this capture, this modeler is doing the thing that you want it to do.
I had a lot of fun early in lockdown, because we had just moved, right? We just moved to this new place. We'd bought a house. And it was, we closed on the house on Friday, March 13th, 2020. Woof. And you see where this is going.
Yep.
So we ended up with this big empty house. We got our stuff, but even then it was still in a lot of boxes. So I had some empty rooms. And so I started putting my speaker cabs in those rooms.
Yeah.
And I started making, well, besides playing loud, I started making IRs of my speakers.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's another thing that people ought to get into in this recording world that we're in. Know how to make your own IRs. If you got an amp or a speaker cab that you absolutely love, it's surprisingly easy to make your own IRs.
Mm-hmm.
You need some microphones and a power amp. That's basically what you need. So I have really enjoyed getting really deep back into the sounds that I can make, things I can do with a microphone, moving it around and creating some. Now I've just got to put it all together and actually start recording music and not just, you know, the 10, 20, 30, 40 second snippets that I've been making. Here, check out this really weird noise.
Hey, I get it.
Yeah. So moving on from that just a little bit. So this week, as this episode drops, we're all gearing up for Gear Fest a little bit. Are you headed to Indiana?
I am. I'm headed back.
Yeah.
Yep.
So you excited?
Tuesday. Yeah. Tuesday.
Yeah.
The 19th or 20th, whatever it is.
So next week, this episode will come out, listeners. If you're listening this on the day it released, it'll be next week that Gear Fest is happening. You've probably seen all the emails in your email box already of different artists and different things that are going on. So I'm not spilling any beans here.
No.
But I found it interesting. I sort of expected, as things opened back up and went back to normal, I expected Sweetwater to go back to their old format of sort of an in-person kind of thing, but they've not. They've kept it closed and virtual.
Yeah, I don't think it... I don't want to speak for them because I don't know this for a fact, but I'm assuming that what they're doing is getting... Let me backpedal a little bit. When they would have GearFest, they'd have like 20 to 30,000 people come through.
Yeah. Right?
Which is a big deal. That's a lot, especially for Martinsville, or not Martinsville, Fort Wayne, Indiana. Martinsville, where Wampler lives.
Yes.
Fort Wayne, Indiana. That's a lot of people to come through an event in Fort Wayne, Indiana, or anywhere, really. That's a lot of people. But I think that they have seen that for the Sweetwater brand itself and for all the brands involved, my assumption is once they got the data back on the first Gear Fest, they're like, yeah, we got like a couple million impressions versus 20 to 30,000.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, while maybe those impressions aren't quite as valuable as the in-person experience would be.
Sure.
For the Sweetwater brand as a whole and for the brands that they are working with. This is just my assumption. I think they're probably like, I think this is a better bang for our buck. It's still costing them a fair bit of money. Yeah. So it's not like it's cheap. But it also, I think, is getting them more eyeballs from a data perspective than they otherwise would have got. That's why I think they're doing it this way. That's just my guess. I don't know that for sure. I've not confirmed that with anybody. That's just, like you, I would assume that they would be going back to in-person. And Sweetwater really knows what's going on in this business. And they really,
yeah, they do.
They're very data-driven as a company. And if they did not, I have to assume it's for a fairly good reason.
Yeah, it wasn't some arbitrary decision that they just made without really putting a lot of thought and research into it, I'm sure.
Yeah, so I think that's why it might be even slightly bigger this year based on the list that I saw of people that were attending. It looks like it might be even a little bit bigger in that regard. So,
wow.
Like last year was kind of the test.
Uh-huh.
And this year, I don't know that for a fact. I'm just kind of thinking out loud based on who I remember being there and the list that I saw. I think there's a few more folks going.
Very cool.
So yeah, that's my guesstimate on it anyway.
So in that vein, I've noticed on your social media, you've been posting a lot of videos of you working out more lately, lifting, hitting the squats and deadlifts hard. Are you getting ready for the Roadie Games? Is that what's going on?
I didn't even participate last year, so I don't know.
I know.
I've always done that. I've not always posted it. I mean, it's usually in a story form. I've been putting a little bit on my personal Facebook, but I've always been into lifting. And this year I started training at a gym called Kabuki Strength, which is a really well-known powerlifting equipment manufacturer. Well, not just powerlifting, but strength equipment manufacturer. Sure. A lot of sports teams use their bars. They make regular barbells, but they also make a lot of specialty stuff for athletes, like actual athletes, like professional football players, basketball players and stuff, to be able to train and gain.
You mean guitar playing is not a sport? Is that what you're telling me?
Not as far as I'm aware. That's why I got into it. I didn't like sports, but they make a lot of stuff for athletes that can train and do these like powerlifting type moves that are good for gaining strength, but can be not super conducive to their given sport. It lets them still develop in some of those methodologies while having different joint angles on things and things beyond that my understanding, to be perfectly honest.
But
they have a lot of really good trainers there. And so I started training there. It's fairly close to my house, about 20-minute drive.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know what? I've been doing this by myself for a really long time, and I pretty much just went and plateaued for a long time, for years and years. What if I actually talked to somebody who knew what they were doing, rather than me just going in there and be like, I feel like doing this today. So I got a trainer, and he's helped me progress a lot in the last few months. And I realize I've talked about it a fair bit on the podcast, but I don't really share it on socials as much. But it is a big passion of mine. It helps keep me sane And so I've been sharing that a little bit more, that side of me a little bit more as it's gone on. So hit some PRs lately, and I thought now was a good time because I'm like, I'm feeling good. Let's do it. Let's let people know that I'm feeling spicy.
Yeah, I used to be really, really into lifting because I did play sports. I played football and baseball and did all the things.
Isn't that required where you live? You get excommunicated if not?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Even if you have some kind of something that keeps you from normally being able to play football,
we'll find
a way that's unacceptable. Yeah. Like I literally watched a video when I was, I don't know, in my early 20s of a guy who played college football who had no legs.
Oh, wait, what?
Yeah, he played nose guard on the defense, and he would use his hands to propel himself, and he was fast.
That guy's a beast. I'm terrified of this person right now.
Absolutely monstrous. There's video out there, y'all, if you want to go find it. Actually, in my head, I'm thinking he may have actually passed from complications of whatever it was that at this point, but he did. He played college football and was pretty good at the smallish school that he played at. But I got
to even be able to do that at all.
Yeah.
To even play like casually with your friends and have that be what's going on, let alone playing college football on any level. That's insane.
I couldn't play college football
on any level. They'd have been like, get out of here.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
So, but I was really, really into weightlifting. I shattered my ankle my freshman year. Actually, that's how I got into playing guitar. Similar to you were talking about Daniel, kind of brought memories to when I messed up my leg and I was on crutches for a really long time. That's when I really focused on playing guitar.
I remember that story. Yeah.
Yeah. And getting it under my feet, but I never really got like hardcore back into lifting. I eventually got into running, which anyone who's ever seen me in real life knows that guy runs. Yes. Big guys can run too. Not fast. But then last year I got COVID and I have not been able to like run long distance since because it really affected my breathing really badly for a long time. And so now I'm basically starting at square one, trying to get back into distance and breathing, but I have started lifting again, real slow right now. I'm going, 1 or 2 days a week and lifting, and it's been really fun. You and I had a conversation about bars and why I don't squat anymore, but I'm going to look into that a little more. So, I think that's really cool that you're getting into it again, or you found a way to push further. Cause you've always done it. From the first time I ever met you, we talked about, you know, working out and lifting. So, this is just me putting it into a podcast. Cause I thought it was an interesting, little wrinkle in what you've been up to lately.
Well, thanks, man. Yeah, it's something I've always been really, it's been as much physical. It's like it definitely has helped me physically, but mentally, it's like I had a couple very stressful moments in the last couple months. Nothing too horrible, but just like I'm real stressed right now.
Yeah,
I was just like, I'm going to the gym. I will be back in a couple hours, and I come back and it's like, I'm a brand new man. I'm like, everything's fine. It's all good. Like, it's all good. I got rid of those monsters in my brain. We're good.
Yeah. It's amazing how anything like that, whether working out or just working with your hands, sometimes I will, like when we've got things at work at the library that need to be done, that's more physical labor. Hey, we got to clear out this closet. We've got to move a bunch of stuff over to storage. Or I have sometimes just moving furniture or dismantling things to put into storage, or we're changing things. That kind of stuff de-stresses me so much that I will typically put it off until we're normally closed and everybody goes home. And then I'll come in there, crank loud music, and do whatever physical labor needed to be done in the building, because I always feel better after I do it.
Definitely. Except that time you try to do that and you listen to the American Cyclops record. You didn't feel any better after that time.
No, because it was like 2 in the morning. I'm at the library listening to some of the creepiest shit I've ever listened to. It was one track in particular too, and I wish I could remember which one it was, but I was like, okay, Blake, you're freaking me out now. I'm done here.
But it wasn't even half of it. Go listen to Halloween. That's the single I put out on Halloween. It's not even a song.
Yeah, I still haven't even listened to that one yet. I'm sorry. I keep
meaning
to.
Well, you don't do it at 2 a.m. by yourself.
Yeah, no. I'll wait until 2 a.m. when my wife can listen to it with me. That's going to be...
That's the time you'll need to hold each other. it's the That's worst thing I've ever done. I've got my child screaming on it. It's horrible. Yeah.
Have you seen the... I'm going to call it a TikTok account, but of course everything is now on all the video platforms.
Sure, of course. Everything's TikTok.
Yeah. Of the little kid who does the screaming and the dad turns it into metal music?
No, but it sounds like something I need to see.
Oh, no, it's great. And they just... They've got an endorsement deal with something now. I saw something like has the little kid scream. Oh, Liquid Death, the water, the can. Yeah, she's in a Liquid Death ad now.
I love that. That's so great. I love
it. It's so good. Yeah, no, I think it's fantastic. You got to check that out. So as we're wrapping up the main episode here, I don't quite have your classic questions, and we've covered your favorite piece of PV gear in a previous episode, mm-hmm. and your favorite style of barbecue, I believe was the other question I asked.
So,
you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have started adding a segment where, cause I'm always curious about this because we're all gear fanatics.
Absolutely.
We're always looking for something. There's always something on our radar that, you know, we're interested in. So what's in your, I've tried to come up with like a couple of different names for this segment, but basically, what are you gassing for? What are you hunting?
Well, this part of this is your fault. It's I can't say that I'm actively looking for it, but I'm always looking out for like, maybe that's kind of a good deal on that.
Uh-huh.
I'm always looking for a super reverb.
Man.
I don't need a super reverb. I have absolutely no need for it. But I've played them before,
mm-hmm.
and I love them, and you and a few other people have talked them up like, I think I need a super reverb.
Yeah, you do. Yeah. Everybody needs one.
I'm not even saying that just because I'm on the show. Like, legit, if I'm thinking about, I don't have a lot of things that I'm just, like, actively gassing for.
Sure.
Which is weird to say, but I'm just, like, so engulfed in all this at all times. That it's the gas happens, you know, it happens more honestly with the things that are going to make, which used to not be this way. So uh-huh. Super reverb is the guitar answer. Okay.
But that's the guitar answer.
The more regular answer is what is something that's going to make my workflow or life easier or more efficient or better, just like better quality and some, as far as the content goes.
Yeah.
What is some, like right now, I got these Loom Cube 2-point lights that I don't have to shuffle lights around anymore. They're kind of just mounted. I turn them on. All right, I'm good. I'm a little sweaty today, so I'm a little glisteny. But like, so this isn't the best example. But when I have a little more time and I'm not like running, I can just like get everything set up so much faster and so much easier. You know, it's like a couple $100 and it's like very boring. It's lights. Who cares? But it's made my workflow in the last few weeks so much faster and easier. I can get into podcasts faster. I can just go. I don't have to think about things. Turn these on, hit a button for the background lights. I'm good to go. You know, so it's things like that that are actually making my day-to-day life easier that I gas for. And I don't always know what those are until I stumble across them.
Man, that's, you know, that's the way I feel about musical instruments in general. It's why... I've talked a bunch on this podcast about why my favorite musical instrument stores tend to be secondhand stores,
mm-hmm.
and that you never know what they're going to have in it. Because half the time I walk in, I don't know what I want.
Right.
It's a journey. I'm here to see what's in here. It was like I've told this story, and I'm trying to remember if it was on a recent episode. So listeners, I apologize if I'm telling it again. But it was like one of my first trips ever to Carter Vintage. And I asked someone walked up to me and said, hey, what are you looking for? Like, how can I help you? I was like, mm-hmm. I don't know. I just want something weird. I've got this much money. Just want something weird.
I've said that before. It's always a good move.
Yeah. And ultimately didn't find anything that day, but I played a lot of really cool, really rad stuff. And it actually turned out that the person helping me was Walter Carter. I didn't realize it at the time. It was just this older gentleman walked up and said, what are you looking for? He started putting things in my hands that I could not afford, and he knew I could not afford.
But he's like try it. You want to try it anyway.
Yeah, Bella, here, you need to try this. He's like, started pulling things down. Like, because he knew my budget. I told him, this is how much money I have. So, but yeah, that's
he's
my
heard
favorite
that a million thing. Times. This is my budget. He's like, well, here's something that's 20% more than your budget, but it's really awesome.
There were some things he handed me that were like 120% more than my budget. And I was like, that's not happening, sir.
No, but I don't think that's the point of his store, though. Like, I was being a little bit tongue-in-cheek there. Like,
sure,
he wants to sell things. Right. Every business owner does. But they really are about just having a good experience and getting to play things that you never get to play there.
Yeah.
You're never going to get to play some of that stuff anywhere else.
No. Well, that's why I love Fanny's House of Music in Nashville. Which is incredible. I don't know if you're hip to Fanny's or been over there.
I know about Fanny's. I haven't gotten to go there yet. It's been on my list for a long time, and I have to fix that.
Dude, and it's like around the corner from Five Points Pizza. So it's super easy. Well, over there, I don't know if there's another location for Five Points. There's a the Five one. Points location.
Yeah, the one Five Points.
Yeah.
Wait, what? Yeah.
I know. It's Five Points is the worst intersection in the history of Nashville. I hate that intersection.
It's so dumb, but such a good area at the same time. Like,
yeah.
Everything I want's over there. Anyway.
So,
but yeah, I
got
to
go check it out. Yeah, you got to go. It's where the raddest stuff is. Well, Blake, I appreciate you coming on the podcast this week. I appreciate you taking some time. I know you are a busy dude. You're tough to track down. And the 2-hour differential in our time zones don't help either.
We'll make it happen. I'll make it happen anytime for you.
I appreciate it, sir. I appreciate it happening. Well, we're going to go over to the Patreon episode and chat just a little bit more. That's where we say all the things we can't say on the main episode, because that's how that works.
We got to copy and paste my door stuff over there.
No, so that's fine. Wait till you hear what we say on Patreon.
Here we go.
Yeah. So we're going to go over there, but listeners, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. If you watched on YouTube, thank you for remember to rate, review, like, subscribe, share with friends, do all those things. It's greatly appreciated. I appreciate all of you. Oh, yeah. See, now it's getting real. So we're going to go over to Patreon, but until I see you again next time, for Blake and myself, be good to yourselves. Be kind to each other and make some noise. This episode is brought to you by the supporters of 40 Watt Podcast over on Patreon. Go over to patreon.com/40wattpodcast, where for as little as $3 per month, you can help support the podcast and get every episode ad-free. For $5 a month, you'll get every episode ad-free, as well as a bonus episode every week. I can't overstate how thankful I am for the support of my patrons, and hope you'll consider joining the team and helping keep this show on the road.